Okay, so I want to talk about the quantum material theory, description of small objects in entirely serious space-time, set all in context of the well-known ABS-CFT duology. And this is work that I did with Gary, and was posted a few weeks ago. So, although I won't talk, well, not talk about black holes at all in my talk until the very end, I can't resist saying a few words now at the beginning. It's because the original motivation for this whole project was to describe small black holes in ABS5 cross S5 in terms of the gauge theory. Well, understanding small black holes would be the first step to learning something about the black hole information paradox via the ABS-CFT correspondence. And even more optimistically, one might actually hope that having the small black hole description in the gauge theory point of view could help us, give us hints to some of the more lofty but elusive issues in quantum gravity, and the gauge theory description of the space-time quantum gravity, their tendency to black holes and black hole singularity. So to describe Hawking evaporation of the black hole in ABS, one needs to start with a small black hole. And by Gregory Laplombe, instability as small black hole in ABS 5 versus 5 will be localized on the time sphere. I'm sort of trying to sketch it here. Small black hole in ABS 5 versus 5 will sit at the center of ABS, but will be localized at some point on the five sphere. So locally, it looks like a 10-dimensional Schwarzschild black hole with a horizon being an 8-sphere cross time. So, well, we don't have...
You don't want
them?
Like that? Okay. So, I forget where I was. Okay, so this was the original hope. Now, this localization on the phi-sphere is very important from the gauge theory point of view, because this would correspond to expectation value of certain operators on the gauge theory, the scalar fields having non-trivial expectation values. And so one could hope to get a handle on small black holes via these scalar fields. Now, even more optimistically, one could hope to get a handle or some information just from local operators composed of these scalar fields. But unfortunately, we don't have the exact solution, and corresponding to a small black hole, and so we're very far from this goal of describing small black holes in gauge theory. But one can ask a more general but equally interesting question, namely, how much information can one actually learn from these local fields on the gauge theory about a source which lives deep inside ADS? And so our focus turned from black holes to this more sort of holography-oriented issue. So, of hand, one might expect that because of the famous UVIR correspondence, the small sources in ADS are described by highly non-local operators in the gauge theory. And so the local operators, one might fear, would carry no information, or very little information about the source, such as just its mass. But we will actually find that that's not the case. And, well, it is true that local operators in the field theory correspond to the asymptotic values of the bulk fields, but it turns out that the bulk fields carry an amazing amount of information about the source. So in particular, one can read of all the multiple moments, essentially the multiple moments of a source, which I will talk in quite a bit of detail later on. And, well, even more remarkably, one can actually tell the size of a spherically symmetric source in ADS 5 classes 5. So that's the main result, and that's what will form the main part of my talk. Well, let me just say, in flat space, of course, this is the analogous situation is, of course, very different. We can't tell the size of a source from its asymptotic field for a spherical symmetric source, and also the multiple moments of the source fall off much faster. So again, from the leading order asymptotic field, we just know the mass. So, well, this is what I will, this is the outline of the talk. I will first talk about the relation, review the relation between the multiple moments and the asymptotic field, and give the very familiar flat spacetime example. And then I will describe why is the situation so different in case of ADS 5 crosses 5, and how this connects to the conformal field theory description. And then I will talk about the results. So I will show that these local operators, which I will describe, yield the size of the spherical source, and in fact, this effect of the size increases with the scaling dimension of these operators. It increases quadratically for a small dimension, but actually exponentially for large scaling dimension. Now, the fact that we can see the size of the source at all is quite remarkable, but the fact that we can see it somehow exponentially large is just amazing. I will try to explain why this comes about. And then I'll talk about different sources with different profiles and non-spherically symmetric sources, and we'll see in that case that the effects are even more pronounced and are actually strikingly different. And, well, if time allows, I'll come back to the black holes and I'll end with summarizing and posing some puzzles and extensions. So, let me just start with talking about the relation between multiple moments and asymptotic field in a general curved spacetime. So for general static spacetime with some general metric, we can write the massive scalar wave equation. Now, by the way, of course, ultimately in the ADS-CFT correspondence, we're interested in all kinds of supergravity fields, but in particular the metric. I'm considering the scalar field because it's a good toy model, and you could view it as corresponding to the dilton. But the behavior of the scalar field should be very indicative of what we'll see for the metric. So this massive scalar wave equation if you take the solution to this sourceless solution to this equation, which is non-singular, and integrate, you get a relation between multiple moments of a source S with the integral over the asymptotic field phi. So this is just the generalization of the familiar flat space result. U is this solution to this wave equation without a source. Time is just this is just the static space-time time translation Killing field. You have some slice at constant time throughout the space, and with a boundary, which I'm calling S, and normal derivatives and I. So this is the relation in that setup. So in particular, for flat space, one just has the very familiar expression where this is the scalar wave equation, and of course the solution, which is non-singular and gross, has this radial dependence, just radial r to the l. And so the full solution can be written, expanded in spherical harmonics, and has this particular radial dependence, with the coefficients are corresponding to the multiple moments are just given by the integral with the source with the spherical harmonics and this u. So I have just adopted the Chang-Sun convention. And here we see that the higher multiple moments, higher L, have radial dependence which falls off faster. And so we see that indeed from just the leading order asymptotic field, L being zero, we just recover Q00, which corresponds to the mass. So now that's the case for the massless field in flat space. And of course we can't see the size, all we can see is the mass. Now for a massive field, there is another point that one can already see, and that is that, well, now the field falls off exponentially. The solutions are exponentially growing and decaying, have that radial dependence. So the field is expressed this way with some coefficient. And when one uses the formula in the previous transparency for a unit, for a source with size R naught, this coefficient actually ends up being exponentially large in the size. So the coefficient of this leading order falloff grows exponentially with the size, even for flat spacetime. But of course, the field itself is very small outside the source because this exponential growth is more than compensated for by this exponential decay of the field. But it shows that if we somehow could have a handle on just the coefficient, we would be in business. We would see an exponential information about the size. Now, the ADS-CFT correspondence for ADS space allows us to do exactly that. So let me get to the ADS-CFT. Well, before getting to the conformal field theory side, let me just talk about remind people about the ADS5 plus S5 spacetime, just to set the notation. So with setting the radius of curvature to 1, this is the full metric, and I'm denoting the radial coordinate in ADS5 by rho, and the sort of radial coordinate for this localized source by chi. Now, if you look locally, of course, near the source, the space is nearly flat, and so we have, here I will denote the radial coordinate by r, and we just have the Minkowski 10-dimensional space around the source. So for this spacetime, we can now write the field equation just as before. And, well, first point to make is that if we consider just ADS part, the massless field in ADS part plus S5 would correspond to the massive field in ADS5 by the standard Kaluza-Klein reduction. So one might expect that somehow this flat space, that one could see this generalization of this massive field equation in the flat space. So after doing the standard mode decomposition of the field in terms of spherical harmonics on the 3-sphere in ADS and the 5-sphere, which are defined here, and doing a similar decomposition for the source, the radial part of the scalar wave equation is just given by this with some potential. The important part about this is that the asymptotic solution, setting rho here to infinity, drops all the modes, three sphere dependent modes, L hat, which are defined to be the modes for the S3 spherical harmonics, and we're just left with the five sphere information. So the leading asymptotic solution is written in this way, where we have some coefficient, and the radial dependence is given as 1 over rho to the L plus 4, where L is the mode on the 5 sphere. So that shows that the higher multiple moments of the field in ADS 5, so given by these L hats, actually do not fall off faster at asymptotic way. And so from the leading behavior of the field, we could recover all the multiple moments in ADS 5. Sorry?
It must fall off for a while.
Yes, indeed. So that is quite right. So near the source, the space look approximately flat, and we have the usual flat space intuition. Now, what happens is that the solution to the radial equation in ADS at first grows as, actually I have written it on the next transparent system. So let me just continue this. So these coefficients are given by an expression with the radial solution, where the radial solution grows as rho to the L hat, just as you would expect, near the center, but loses this L hat dependence and just depends on rho to the L as asymptotically. And so what happens, you start out with the growth of the solution, and then it asymptotes to a constant given by the ADS radius.
So non-normalizable modes.
That's right. These are the things that come into the U that I had on the, into the definition of the multiple moments. So the field will have the normalizable modes, and the coefficients will have the non-normalizable modes in them. So the point is,
Sorry, maybe I should just say one thing and maybe clarify perceived. I mean, the field itself, as Veronica says, is perfectly normalizable. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the way the fields would fall off.
You're taking its inner product, which is non-normalizable.
Well, it's not even that. It's just the formula which relates the coefficient of this normalizable piece to the source involves this integral of the source with the solution of the homogeneous equation, which is regular at the origin.
So this is the...
And, in fact, grows asymptotically. Mm-hmm. And so... U itself happens to be one of these things which, if you looked at its asymptotic behavior, gets very big and would not be normalizable. Right. But that's not the physical field. It's just this mathematical construct, if you want, which you, in this identity.
Which you use to read off the
whole. Yeah.
Exactly. So, what happens is, if we reinstate in the ADS radius, by dimensional analysis, the field actually scales, has factors of ADS radius in it. So the higher multiple moments are scaled down by appropriate factors of the ADS radius. So they indeed do fall off faster at the near the origin, but asymptotically, they're just given by this behavior. Okay, so these coefficients of the field's fall-off are, as I said, given by this expression where the radial solution to the wave equation is ABS, in ABS is given by this hypergeometric function, which has the regular behavior at the origin and goes to a constant for constant L, and goes to rho to the L as asymptotically. So if we consider just sources smeared over the 5-sphere, then these really are the multiple moments of this effective source, of this source averaged over the 5-sphere in ABS. Now, if we want to consider higher L, again, for small enough L, we would have, again, the solution inside the source being roughly 1, and again, we would have this effective multiple moments of this effective source, where this effective source is now convolved with the higher spherical harmonics on the 5-sphere. So that's what I mean by retrieving all the multiple moments effectively of the source. So
the multiple moments, sorry.
So, L
hat is the 5-sphere,
I guess? No, L hat is the 3-sphere. And L is the 5-sphere. So we can, from the beside the coefficient on the asymptotic field, so we can retrieve all these M, L, L hats.
By all the multiple moments, you mean all the multiple moments?
I mean all these. And
in the ordinary 3-space.
That's right, in ABS 5. Well, this is, okay, this is the technical statement of what we can retrieve, and to think about it easier, these correspond to the multiple moments for source smeared over the 5-sphere and such. Yes?
Do you understand that rho is the size of the object?
Sorry?
Is rho the size of the object?
Rho is the radial coordinate of in the ADS. So rho is just this. The size of the...
Is the size of the object, is it like, it's the region inside which you have given for density, or?
Yes, that's right. The size of the object, which I will denote by R naught, is exactly given by that, but the density is, the source density is non-zero inside.
A mode which has higher angular minimum than 5-sphere falls off more rapidly in ABS 5 space.
The mode which has a
higher angular minimum than 5-sphere falls off.
That's
more
right. Yes.
ABS5.
Yes. Exactly. Well, that's exactly.
ABS 5 care about what's going on in the sphere.
It's effectively more massive from the bottom initial point of view.
But the power, how can it affect the power?
Power depends on the effect.
Oh, but the multiple moment has a dimension.
Sorry?
The multiple moment will have the dimension.
I understand what the dimension is.
It's just the analog of the same in a cloud space, that the massive field falls off like e to the minus m times r. So you're increasing m, and it's going to fall off more quickly.
Yeah, because this is a power.
Right, well, it's a power in rho, but rho is not proper distance. If you notice, the proper distance is really
that's
log
true.
Rho. So this is exponential.
It is, yes. So this is exactly like the flat space.
But
near
you
the source.
If you could resolve things on the flat space,
everything,
but that's later?
Yes.
Right. Everything is exponential in ABS.
Yeah.
That's right. Because even massless fields are effectively massive. So.
There's always a potential in it.
That's right. That's the square root.
Well, the trick is everything falls off exponentially, but then to make the correspondence, you lose scale exponentially.
Well,
I
can do that.
Blow it back up. Well, but that's part of what you do in ADS.
Exactly.
But
in
ordinary space, if I allow myself to work, can I do that to it? Only massive.
Well, I guess if you had a statement about some boundary theory that corresponds
yes.
to...
Yes.
Well, that's a question of boundary theory.
If you could retrieve the coefficient, you could certainly...
You can see in the asymptotic fields all the details of the source. You're contrasting flat space with ABS.
Well,
is there really a difference, or is it just?
Yes, there is a difference, in the sense that we have this leading falloff containing all the multiple moments of the source, whereas in ADS, whereas the leading falloff contains just the mass in the flat space example. So if we have a correspondence which just retrieves the coefficient of the leading falloff, then we can't retrieve.
You have e to the minus mr times our higher powers falloff.
Yes.
So there's going to be some logarithmic correction.
Yes. Or some
differences.
Or power law correction. Right. Or power law corrections.
But you're switching from exponential to power. So in terms of power.
We have e to the minus mr.
Okay.
That's 1
here
plus 1 over r.
Can't have enough, right? So in the usual case, the language of Rao would be logarithmic.
Yes, okay. Yes. This is just leading power. And that's exactly why. Oh, okay. Good.
But still, if you were to imagine yourself being an ADS observer who went
yes.
way out,
mm-hmm.
you know, these coefficients are highly, highly suppressed, right? It's just, again, it's this fact.
They're suppressed by these powers of R.
What happened to the conformal field theory? You scale it.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, that's what I was saying. From the standpoint of this correspondence, if you start with your gauge theory, you've already done that rescaling.
Right.
You have your operators, you have the expectation values, and you're looking at just the coefficients, and that's all you get. So it is the right thing to look at.
Okay, so we have seen that we can have this exponential size dependence. Again, just to review, these coefficients can grow exponentially with the radial distance, and so if we integrate over the source, which has some extent R naught in rho, we would pick up this ML times R naught, so exponential dependence on the size of the source. So now the connection, well, we have basically already discussed this in the questions, but again, the CFT connection is, the broken SO6 symmetry by the source implies these non-zero expectation values of these gauge theory operators, which involve the scalar, the six scalars, and this a polynomial in them, which is written this way with a traceless symmetric tensor of rank L. And so these Z's are the operators in the gauge theory that I will be considering. Now, again, the asymptotic fields correspond to these expectation values of the local operators. And so in particular for the scalar fields, we have exactly this correspondence that these operators with the scaling dimension L plus 4 correspond to these coefficients of the leading falloff of the field. So now let me specialize a bit to a case which I call bispherical sources, where the source depends just on the radial, it's spherically symmetric in the three sphere in ADS and the five, and localized on the five sphere, so spherically symmetric in the four sphere.
What is sigma? Sigma
is
some operator that relates to what field you're looking at?
Sorry?
What is sigma?
If you mean, well, this is
rho. In the next line, you've got the sigma inside your expectation value.
Sure. Oh, this is an operator, sorry.
Okay.
So this is an operator which corresponds to this field phi. Now, for phi being the Dilton, it would be just the square.
Okay,
so it's just the operator, yes.
Okay.
So, and this is the compost of the scalar fields. So this is the, it's related again to this coefficient of the fall off, and is, which is given by the integral of the source, and then the radial solution in ABS, and the spherical harmonics. Now I should say this, it's convenient to take this combination of the scalar fields to correspond exactly to this spherical harmonics on the five sphere. Yeah, one can think of the scalar fields as being the embedding coordinates on the five sphere, so one can do this. And so that's one point about this is that as I have written it, these operators have different scaling dimensions, and so one can't compare them directly. So to compare them directly, I'm going to normalize them by some convenient sort of reference source, like a delta function. And also, since we have a linear equation, the mass of the source just comes out. So one can define the normalized expectation values in this way, taking the expectation values for the source and normalize it by a delta function with and take out the mass. And so now for small size of the source, one can just use series expansions of all these. And then one finds that, well, one expects that these expectation values should have an order of R naught squared, size squared corrections. Now for large L, these have this exponential growth, but this has an oscillatory behavior. So there is some interplay between those, and it's not a priori clear what the behavior of this will be. So now let me show you some specific examples. First of all, for the uniform density spherical source, which is just given by this, we find an this is the explicit formula for what these expectation values will be. And so we see in particular that one can actually get the size from this term by the deviation from one. And this effect grows quadratically with L, which I have plotted this as a function of L. And so if we go to large enough L, this becomes a big effect. So again, so this is the size at small L appears at order of R naught to the fourth. For small sources, this is tiny, but gets bigger for larger L. So now let's see for very large L, one actually gets this behavior, which is in fact exponential. This is what I was alluding to before. We find an exponential growth of these expectation values with L. And so this means that we can actually, that the size, arbitrarily small size of the source comes in an exponentially large contribution to these expectation values. And so that's for the, so we can certainly determine the size. Now this was assuming uniform density spherically symmetric object. One can ask, how does this, how is this affected if we consider non-uniform density object with different profiles? So I have considered sources with different density profiles. They're still spherically symmetric. And one can find, again, all of them have similar behavior, but for, say, this profile, the radial dependent, these grow slower because the source is effectively smaller. And one can actually rescale the size so that for small L, these all look almost indistinguishable. But that's not, so that would mean that we could tell this size information only up to orders of factors of unity, because after all, we don't know, if we just presented these expectation values, we don't know what the source is. But if we go to large L, there is a distinction. And so here I have plotted the large L for sources of the same size, and here is the case that matched for small L now looks all different for large L. So we could distinguish these source profiles from each other. Let me quickly go on to the next result. Well, we have seen that for the spherically symmetric sources, the expectation values grow, depend on the size at quartic order, grow as 1 plus order of Arnold to the fourth. Now, since the metric is different from flat space at already quadratic order, one might have expected that one should get an order of Arnold to the Arnold squared contribution. And in fact, that's what happens generically. So if we consider, for instance, ellipsoidal sources, which are extended in either the ADS or the sphere directions, so they're defined by this way, then we find that these expectation values actually do contain an order of R naught squared size information. But for the case of spherical symmetry, where the extent is the same in ADS direction and sphere direction, this actually cancels out. And so there is this very special cancellation for spherical sources. And this, in fact, continues on to the large L regime, where we saw an exponential, the expectation values grew as e to the L R naught squared. In general, if the source is extended in ADS directions, we actually find this is the small L regime, but in the large L regime, the expectation values actually grow as e to the L R naught rather than L R naught squared. So there is even bigger exponential.
And this is extended in the U direction. I mean, it's like, is it?
This is in the ADS directions.
Okay.
So.
Is there a symmetry reason for this? Is there some harmonics decouple?
No.
No, it's not a symmetry.
It's not a and it's actually, I will just show you, this is actually one of the big puzzles and remarkable consequences, that this is for, this behavior is for a source which is extended in the ADS directions. Mm-hmm. Could be just a bit, but in the ADS directions. If you extend the source in the sphere directions, again, just a bit, the behavior is completely different. For small L, first of all, the expectation values start falling off rather than rising. But for large L, they fall off all the way down to zero, and then I have blown this up, just oscillate in damped oscillations around zero. So from a small change in the bulk, we get the CFT expectation values, which either grow very rapidly or fall down to zero and oscillate. And it would be really nice to understand why this happens from the field theory point of view. But
this one is what? Extended in?
This one is extended in the sphere directions.
It's an ellipsoid?
It's an ellipsoid with the ratio of the axis of 1 to 2. The other one was squashed by a factor of 2. But again, we have the same behavior for other ratios, except it sort of goes slower.
So when you have a black hole which is localized on a sphere,
yes,
then A is equal to 2, right?
Approximately, it would be, but we don't know the exact solution. It won't be exactly equal to.
No, not exactly, but first order is equal to.
But this becomes, this would become important, because if the first order cancels out at order of R naught to the fourth, this would already come in.
I'm just wondering whether this conservation is somewhat is related to this regular Fermi instability.
But first of all, this has nothing to do with black holes. This is just for sources.
It seems like there is a relation. When you have something which is small, after all, this is just the 10 dimension of that, right, locally.
Yes.
So this is the standard configuration that I think that it should be related to the fact that there is this constellation happening when A is equal to B. When the black hole is very small.
But there is a I'm sorry.
You just explained to us that when A is equal to B, there is some constellation.
Yes. But again, when A is equal to B, we still do get this exponential increase. It's just exponent to the LR naught squared rather than LR naught, since R naught is small. The latter case is smaller, but it's still an exponential increase. So we still get exponentially large information for sources where we can use the linear equation. Now, for black holes, we can't use the linear equation because, I mean, near the horizon, we have highly nonlinear. I mean, the metric would be highly nonlinear. We would have to use 4GR, and so these results are not directly applicable to black holes. So they are applicable to, say, stars or something bigger than black holes, and so we can say this object is too big to be a black hole for the given mass, but.
What you're telling us here is that depending on whether I squish the thing in the ADS direction or the SFAB direction, it's going to look completely different even if the squishing is in the CFG.
Yes.
So if I have a blob of jelly that is very slowly wobbling.
Yes, exactly.
Then it's going to be a dramatic
exactly.
change in the CFG. It's
exactly.
completely switching from one
exactly.
to the other all the time.
Yes.
What a blob of jelly means?
Squishing, oscillating. It should be oscillating.
In the ADS direction and then in the S5 directions.
Well, you could set it up.
Rotating rod.
It's. Yeah. Or you could have rotating rod, or you could have moving sources. There's many configurations. And locally, of course, in ADS5 cross S5, we have the 10-dimensional Poincaré invariant. So there should be no distinction from the gravity side, or very small, and we get suddenly these humongous distinctions in the gauge theory. So, I mean, that's one of the main puzzles of in this whole thing. So.
In the situation where the higher L modes are exponentially increased, doesn't that mean it would be very hard to get information about the low L modes? If you have some, I mean, you've got some set of field configurations, it'll be totally dominated by the large L.
Oh, but we can select what we measure. So if we measure particular operator expectation values of particular thing on the gauge theory, that fixes L.
Right,
and for that fix L.
Enormous cancellations or something. I mean, if.
The large L harmonics are already falling off much faster than the others, so somehow this is a large multiplier on a small term.
That's right. We have normalized by the delta function source, and so the delta function source itself has this exponential behavior.
Again, the source here you're taking, it's flat inside the source and then it drops to zero.
Yes.
So it's sharp.
It's sharp, but one gets similar results for these other profiles that I have shown before.
Okay.
With this very nice smooth.
Is the same that it depends strongly on a squared minus b squared, but not on a squared plus b squared? I mean, is there?
That's right. And in fact, the higher order terms have, in L, or in R naught, would have a squared minus b squared popping in front of L to the fourth, for instance. And so you see a squared minus b squared all over the place, but not a squared plus b squared. Yes.
If you're sampling a function at a fixed number of points, like say 100 points on a sphere, normally, if you go out to a large distance and sample some potential function from some source, you would only be able to pick out, say, the first 100 multiple moments very accurately by doing that sampling, right? Is the same true in your situation?
Well, you can choose. In the case of the standard case, you can sample the multiple moments by looking at a particular spherical harmonic. So convolving the field on the boundary.
Observer on the boundary measures this.
Right.
She assumes he can
arbitrarily accurate.
Perfectly.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm wondering. I mean, if you had an observer that was trying to actually do this,
what kind of observer?
You know,
the CFT observer is exponentially sensitive, basically.
That is the point.
Okay. So there's this remarkable distinction. Now I think I'm basically out of time, so let me just...
You have some more time.
I do?
Started at 1:30.
Oh, good, okay. Excellent. And you didn't have rushed then. Well, let me summarize and come to the black holes at the very end, just to be on the safe side. So, we have seen that, well, first of all, we can read of these multiple moments from the scalar local expectation values of the fields in CFT. We can determine the size of a spherical source with, for small l, we have the size coming in at order r naught to the fourth, but for large n, this is exponentially large contribution. And this is already, there's a special cancellation for the spherical source, so this is actually enhanced if the source is extended in ADS directions. Now, different profiles should be distinguishable, although that should, that needs some more analysis, but certainly the profiles that I have shown are distinguishable, and so one can read up the source size from these. And so, if we're given a gauge theory with some expectation values and are asked to find, well, what does it describe in the bulk, one could say, well, okay, from this it describes, well, the object in the bulk is presumably spherically symmetric because that's the most physically natural configuration. Ah, okay, so I have considered just static configurations, and so in ADS, the source is sitting, in my coordinates, the source is sitting at the origin, and on the sphere, it's given by...
Put it someplace.
On the sphere?
In ADS.
You could put it somewhere else, but it has to follow a geodesic, so it would, if I put it at some other radial position, it would be oscillating, and then in these coordinates, the fields would be time dependent. So that's a slightly different problem.
How could it possibly matter where it is in ADS?
It's exactly.
Information is something static at the center.
Yeah, it's exactly related to this.
You just do a transformation, put it back in the center. On the other hand, it would look something like Sunny and I, computed what the sort of leading field was, the stress sensor was for a particle actually oscillating in ADS, and you get something which, the field theory has particular.
Do you think the cedar position of the source would arbitrary action?
Well, we considered only things which were sort of homogeneous on the 5-sphere, so we didn't worry about any of this sort of stuff. This thing hasn't been looked at for the actual time-dependent oscillating fields localized on the 5-sphere.
Yeah, that's one of the extensions that I'll talk about that would be desirable to do is the time dependence. But, I would expect they would, you could certainly...
Reconstruct.
You should be able to reconstruct the trajectory. I would expect. I don't know because I haven't done it. But, well, in any case, if you know the trajectory at one point, it has to follow a geodesic, so... From that point of view, you could reconstruct it, but if you're not using that information, that might be harder.
I guess one question is, how much difference is there between CFT configurations corresponding to closely separated trajectories? So how much could you resolve?
Well, but in general, if you have...
if
you have
two
if you have, they're still different.
I don't know what's going on in the bulk is physically not different. I mean, whether I look at this thing in one coordinate system or in another,
Oh, well, if you have to.
Well, there's a transformation on the boundary. It's like Raphael sitting in the chair and Raphael moving miles an hour across the room.
Well, it depends whether I'm moving this with the chair or with respect to the chair.
They're different configurations.
So certainly from the scale radius duality, you could say if something goes further out radially in ADS, that would correspond to different excitation in the...
Yeah, sure. Okay, so there are two different trajectories. I'm just wondering how easy it is to distinguish them in CFT language.
And they're different how?
Say if they're just, one is a geodesic that, well, say one is stationary at the origin, the other is one that just, you know, has a slight velocity at the origin and oscillates.
Oh, well, then first of all, the fields would be time dependent for one of them, and
right.
So that would be distinguishable.
Yeah.
I haven't done it yet, sir.
I have a very nice question. Can one create stars in the type 2B?
Ah, well, I don't know.
Yes, I think that if you actually want to follow geodesics, then you can type it.
Wait, what do you mean?
How do you create stars?
That's neglecting self-gravitation.
There.
You can have small things.
You want to have something which is static, right?
Yeah.
There are other forces.
Well, you have stars,
well,
it's the same as in...
What?
You can send two particles.
And they would create a black hole. You want to create a star. This is the
well, first of all, I'm not sure...
What?
Remote.
What?
Remote.
Ah, so you can create large ones. Very great. But I don't see how you can create a star. How can you even create a...
What's wrong with me? Ordinary stars, right, exist. And they exist because, you know, there's kinetic energy creating the pressure for the body, gravitational attraction trying to push it in, and you get a static equilibrium. So...
Well, but you need, you know, the forms.
You...
You don't have, you know, QCD, QCD.
Yeah, okay, and you don't know that things will shine. That's great, right? But what I mean, okay, what I meant by star is not astrophysically.
No, but you, I'm just asking whether you can have something static which is not a black hole or flame, just a dust which would create something, whether there are force problems.
Type 2B.
I don't think
there are excited string states. Which you could use as massive particles.
Which are stable.
Well, they're usually not stable, but if you let the coupling gravity is
there, so. Oh, well, you could consider these planes, and then...
The planes
then
are
then well, okay, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, by star, I mean whatever object, if there is an object which is static and has a definite size, which at sight of it does sound reasonable, then we could tell its size. And that's basically all that I'm claiming. And I'm calling it a star because it's sort of motivated by trying to distinguish black hole for something else that could be small and localized, but it's a very good point, and I don't know.
I don't have a gas of black holes.
Sorry?
I have a gas of black holes.
A gas of black holes?
Or a gas of graviton.
But then...
Gravitational.
No, but... No, gas of... I don't think gas of... I think anything like that would be spread over the five sphere.
Not of course.
Make them very small.
But what would... You might have one. Possibly. I don't know about the gravitons.
I think you're right. I think gravitons are massless and they're going to spread out. So you can't combine gravitons to a very small size.
I think it's part of the reason I ask you, it's part of the finding the POA and the boundaries conform, right? You can't really. How can you understand such a star from the boundary point of view?
How would you understand a small black hole?
Oh, well, this is a finite temperature. This I understand, but this is a finite temperature.
Not small ones.
Oh, right. But below the, what you have the. Right, this is exactly the reason why you want to understand it.
Yes, exactly.
This is not the right answer.
Well, yeah. So it's not even to say start with the star.
Start with the star?
Does the Sewell distinguish you with the large black holes from the large stars?
Sorry?
Large black holes from large stars.
Yeah, okay, so large black holes, which are larger than the AdS radius, just correspond to these thermal states in gauge theory. If you have something that has the same mass and is supposed to be a star, it would have to be, a star would be confined to AdS radius, and so it will actually end up being inside the Schwarzschild radius of the object, which would be a black hole at the same mass. So then sort of generic state should be a black hole. So that won't be large star. Now for smaller black holes, you have that localized on the five sphere, and then at that point you have a question, well, is it a star or a black hole? For a star, we can use this analysis because the star will be, you can use the linearized equation and you can say its mass and you can tell its size and you can see, okay, well, this is too big to be a black hole. And so you can say, okay, this is not a black hole. And similarly, you can tell a black hole from its Hawking radiation from a thermal gas because the thermal gas will be spread out over the far sphere, whereas the black hole is localized. And actually, one more, since I'm talking about this, if the black hole Hawking evaporates, one could hope that to discern this, having this bound shrink, and so one could possibly see evaporation of black hole even in this regime. So let me just quickly mention some of the extensions, since we have been talking about this already. Well, first of all that I have said sort of extends to other spacetimes of interest, which I have checked. Now, as we already said, it would be very useful to study time-dependent sources and study the fields expectation values in the gauge theory for time-dependent sources. Also, I have considered just the scalar field, and it would be nice to extend it to the general tensor fields, or in particular to the graviton, to the metric. And it certainly would be nice to do this in the full relativistic context, which, I mean, there is no problem in principle of having the scalar fields or having the local operators in the gauge theory tell us exactly what the source looks like. There is a problem of sort of practically doing it.
So you don't know that this is the same effect happens for tensor fields?
I have not checked it. I expect that it would, because the wave equation is very similar. But I certainly have not checked it.
Like the wave equation for the spin two modes of the graviton in ADS5 isn't the scale.
Yeah. And certainly you could consider various components, trace and such, which, I mean, certainly has this behavior. Okay, so just to restate the puzzles, I think one of the biggest puzzles are these similar configurations in the bulk producing such vastly different behaviors in the gauge theory. That would be very nice to explain from the gauge theory point of view. Also, why are the normalized expectation values exponentially large in the first place? That's another puzzle. I mean, we have small source, and suddenly it sort of reflected in this exponentially large expectation values. And for dynamical settings with these oscillating jellos, we would have very vastly differing, well, things going from exponentially large to somehow damped. So that's one set of puzzles. Another set of puzzles is this special cancellation for the spherical symmetry. It holds in this ADS P cross SQ spacetimes for all the relevant P and Q for the ADS CFT correspondence, but not for other ones. So for other cases, we would see size dependence at order of R0 squared rather than R0 to the fourth. And it would be interesting to find out what is special about these particular spacetimes that give this special cancellation. And, well, finally, well, does all, what light does all this shed on holography? We have seen on the one hand that we can't quite take the flat spacetime intuition over to ADS, and if we consider small sources in ADS, it's not quite the same as considering sources in flat space, because these ADS 5 process 5 boundary conditions are very important. On the other hand, we might have thought that one can't get much information from the local operators on the gauge theory because they should correspond to just asymptotic fields, but in fact they contain very much information about the source. So maybe this somehow facilitates the holographic description of ADS CFT. So I think on that note, I'll end. Yes?
You said something about black holes that you didn't describe them. So here you only have sources, right?
We have sources. We only have sources where we can use linear wave equation.
We have black holes in some of the examples. Not just black holes in gravity. Maybe like maybe a sphere, so you could basically the equivalent of a rod, which the distance had to be. And
sure.
So I mean that would probably.
Well, that's what Raphael suggested.
No, you just have 2 point black holes, like two linear, and they just.
I mean, locally it can be just a three-dimensional space, flat space, so we can set up.
It's not a static configuration.
No, that's right. And
but
so this analysis doesn't
only.
It's not
static.
It's not static.
It's not a
static.
It's more important here that everything is static, and you know, it's just like a large plane, which is moving, and then. All of this, I guess, should be modified. I don't know how, but it should be modified. And also for two black holes, it should be modified. I think that the fact that everything was static here is very important.
I certainly have done all the analysis for static sources. I think this will extend to dynamical situations. But also, I think what Raphael suggested with sort of gas of black holes, you could view it as basically static, almost static configuration,
gas
maybe.
Why won't
they collapse?
Yeah, there's no pressure there.
There must be some centrifugal force which would push them along.
The black holes, if they're very small, they would like particles, give them a lot of kinetic energy.
Yeah, why don't they collapse?
They move. That's what a star does too, but they move on a very small distance scale. So from far away, it looks like static.
Yeah, because pressure.
There's no pressure. You need to have an equation of state.
Other direction.
And you can't get a solution for the masses.
Mm-hmm. I think it's essentially like quantum particles undergoing Newtonian attraction, and we have stars. You know, you can get stars out of that.
But there's
and body people do all the time.
I mean, pressure, I mean, black holes, you can crunch them into each other. Stars aren't kept by
something. The thing is that collisions, they won't bounce, right? When they collide, they'll just merge.
That's right.
So, but I don't think collisions are very important.
The pressure, yeah, the pressure is just by Newtonian.
That's the logic of what you need to. And I would say that Joe Lizard is actually saying that, that if what you're saying was correct, then there is something wrong in the IDSTP dictionary. And therefore, this configuration.
Because it's also so absurd they can't talk about it.
Why is this exponential increase? It makes no sense. I don't understand. From the IDSTP point of
view. Why?
Because if I have something which is, you know, locally just Minkowski, right? And all the information is get lost. I don't understand how come at the boundary suddenly I get all this information out of nowhere. The information is really lost at the scale of the ideas. How come that the boundary
is not really lost? It's just suppressed by a finite amount.
But this finite is exponentially large, right?
It's not gone.
But you could say that for anything in ideas.
Good. I don't see it. It looks like a plus to me for the
logarithm. No, yeah.
It's really why logarithm is easier in ADS 5 process 5. You know, why that was somehow discovered first, because you actually have a logarithm.
That would be another well-known example.
It'll be well-known in 20 years. Eventually, you have one of these configurations with lots of large L modes excited in these exponentially large things. If you tried to approximate that in a finite end gauge theory, would you just lose the high L modes, or would you have some other bizarre
substitution? Oh, you're thinking about the expulsion principle, or?
Exciting the higher L modes.
Really? You've got some
higher L
source.
Operators to detect
them. That's right.
Okay, but you've got a source which has a distribution of matter which includes higher L modes, so that all the modes have some non-trivial coefficient at large distance. If you try to approximate that by finite n CFT instead of infinite n, there would be some relationships between the...
Are you worried about the string exclusion principle?
No, I'm just talking about the fact that the traces of the z's have linear relations as you go up to...
Okay, but that's for L being larger than n.
That's right, so I want
to
try...
Oh, so, well, so this would correspond to sources much, much smaller than the Planck scale. So I'm considering sources bigger than the Planck size, and so...
But the n sets the radius.
I'm setting the ADS radius to 1, which is n to the 1/4.
Okay.
And the source is larger than the Planck size, but much smaller than the ADS radius. And so that sets the limit. And so I never get up to L being of order n. So I'm never worrying about that.
Keep L below n.
Yes. Yeah. There is
a cutoff to the exponential. You're right. When L gets to be of order n,
that's
but that's much. You're having huge exponential growth before you reach that.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.